Now, the federal deficit is projected to hit $2.3 trillion this fiscal year. That's smaller than the record $3.1 trillion last year, but according to the Congressional Budget Office, it would still surpass 10% of the overall economy. That would make it the second largest deficit proportionally since World War II. That doesn't include the $1.9 trillion COVID-19 relief bill that the House is planning to vote on tomorrow. Meanwhile, the federal debt, that's the sum of annual deficits, it's expected to reach 102% of GDP by the end of this year, 107% in 10 years. Our next guest says those numbers mean that the COVID bill needs some work. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How concerned are you about the annual deficit, the overall debt? What do you think should be done about it? Should Congress pass the COVID relief bill as is, or do you worry that it's too expensive? What questions do you have about federal spending or revenue? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Mark Goldwine is the Senior Vice President and Senior Policy Director for the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. Mark, welcome back to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Let's talk about how we got here in budget numbers. First of all, pre-COVID, we had a thing where the economy was going up, but our deficit was going up, which I think is a little weird. What was happening there before this huge COVID thing hit us?
Yeah, this really was an aberration. Through most of our history, when the economy's been doing well, we've been reducing deficits, both because strong growth means strong revenue and because policymakers took the opportunity to cut spending and raise taxes if necessary. This time around, we cut taxes and we raised spending during recovery. And so we were facing trillion-dollar annual deficits before the COVID crisis even started.
And then here comes COVID. And of course, there's a hit on both those sides you just talked about. Our revenues go down because a lot of businesses were just flat out closed. And then the demand for a lot of things, food stamps and things like that goes up. And the COVID aid packages. Talk about the hit that had when it came to our deficit last year.
That's exactly right. The economy took a big hit and that did affect the deficit. But really the big effect was we've passed so far about $3.5 trillion worth of COVID relief. And that's really expensive. And that's the reason we ended up with record high deficits last year and deficits that are going to be sort of a number two record this year.
And now, as you look at this new package supported by President Biden and Democrats, most of them in Congress, it looks like, what are your concerns about the amount of spending and the kinds of spending you're seeing in this package?
Sure. Well, I think we should spend whatever is necessary to get through this crisis. Any dollar spent to end the pandemic sooner is worthwhile. And now's not the time to be skittish about borrowing to help the economy recover. The issue with this package is it seems like it spends way more than was what is needed, and not just a little bit more, maybe about three times as much as what's needed to bring the economy into recovery. And a lot of that money is going to states and localities that don't need it, to households that have actually seen their incomes grow, or for policies like a pension bailout that have nothing to do with COVID relief at all.
Yeah, which particular parts would you want to keep? What do you look at and say, okay, this is money that is well spent, even if it does bring up the deficit this year?
So the money spent on vaccines, on testing and tracing, on making sure that PPE is funded and schools can reopen, that's worthwhile. The money spent to extend unemployment benefits, which a lot of people are going to lose by the middle of next month to early April. That's worthwhile, although I would make some adjustments. The money spent on housing assistance, on nutrition, that money makes a lot of sense. Where I get a little tied up is the huge amounts of money spent on checks. And while I do think we need to send some money to states and localities, especially those that are hurting, like Alaska and Hawaii and Florida and Nevada, we don't need to spend $500 billion on state and local aid.
Right. I know you focus on the federal budget, but there was a big concern that states and local governments were going to face a huge crunch, declining sales taxes, more expenses during COVID. What have we seen panning out for most state governments at this point?
So what we saw, states did face a huge crunch in the spring of last year. And for some states, again, like the ones I named, states that are reliant on tourism or oil prices, that crunch has remained. But for most states, their revenue is pretty much recovered or close to recovered to pre-pandemic levels. Meanwhile, we've already actually offered about $350 billion of federal aid, either to the states and localities directly, or to schools or transit authorities, other things that are public run. And so there still is some need, but it's not nearly as bad as what we thought it was going to be a few months ago.
Talking to Mark Goldwine from the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget about a big jump in our annual deficit, especially during COVID, a big jump in our overall national debt. You can join in with your thoughts and questions at 800-642-1234. Mark, spell out for us the damage you worry about if we have these huge deficits.
So there's sort of these near-term risks and there's these long-term costs. In the near term, there's a small but significant risk that we're going to spend so much that we will either cause high levels of inflation or, and this would be kind of ironic, we will juice the economy so much that jobs will be at an unsustainable level. We'll have such good employment that the only thing that can follow is a crash. And so I do worry that we overjuice the economy, either we get inflation or we get sort of a spike in a crash. That's a near-term concern. I think that the chance of either of those happening is less than 50%, but you know, maybe more than a quarter. So it's something worth considering. Over the long term, if we continue to borrow at this current pace, not just for COVID, but for our core spending, which is well in excess of our revenue and growing, it slows economic growth and reduces income. Basically, every dollar that somebody spends buying a government bond is a dollar they're not otherwise putting into the economy, either by spending it, by buying stocks, by putting in the bank that can then relend it. And over time, that starts to eat away at our economic growth. Maybe the Congressional Budget Office thinks about 0.2% per year. 0.2% is not that big a deal over just 1 year. But when it happens every year over and over again, it starts to really eat at income. And it means that 30 years from now, you know, per person income could be $7,000 lower than it otherwise would be.
Let's look at a post-COVID world, which is hopefully sooner than later. How would you like to see government, Congress, and the White House tackle spending, given that, you know, there's one party that really doesn't want to raise taxes, one party that doesn't really want to cut spending, and some sort of sacred cows out there that are hard to do either way? What would you like to see happen?
Yeah, look, so we don't need to balance the budget, but we can't be running trillion-dollar deficits indefinitely. I think the place to start is let's get our major trust funds under control. Our highway trust fund is projected to run out of money by 2022, next year. The Medicare trust fund by 2026 or so. The Social Security trust funds, both the disability and old age, in the early 2030s. So let's start by saving those programs. And yes, it's going to mean some people are going to pay more taxes, maybe more gas tax or more payroll tax. And yes, it's going to mean that benefits for some of these programs are going to grow a little bit more slowly, and some medical providers are going to get reimbursed a little bit differently or a little bit less. But the good news is we're going to make these programs solvent, so there's no immediate across-the-board cuts, which is what calls for under current law. If we could make those trust funds solvent, all four of those big trust funds, we'd go a long way towards getting our debt under control, and we'd do it while getting something else in return.
We're talking about the federal deficit and what Washington could do to shrink it with Mark Goldwine. He's Senior Vice President and Senior Policy Director for the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you worried about the deficit? What, if anything, would you like to see done about it? When you look at a new COVID relief package, do you think going big is needed now in still tough times for some people, or do you think it should be pared back? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're taking a look at the federal deficit. Earlier this month, the Congressional Budget Office projected a deficit of $2.3 trillion this fiscal year. It's a big one, and that doesn't count the COVID relief bill set to be voted on in the House tomorrow. Mark Goldwine is Senior Vice President and Senior Policy Director at the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Rebecca is with us in Madison. Rebecca, hi.
Hello.
What did you want to bring up, Rebecca?
Well, there's 2 points. One, the COVID bill, as you keep mentioning, it should be just COVID relief for our people if it's going to be there. There should not be any earmarks for any corporations, for other countries. That we need to stop doing that. We need to stop supporting all these other countries as long as our country has got a deficit. We shouldn't be spending millions and billions of dollars to other countries. And secondly, the unemployment. Those of us who are self-employed, we don't get anything extra. In fact, we took a hit this year. While those that are getting unemployment, I would like to know what genius came up with the idea of giving them $600 extra a week. That was ridiculous. I understand maybe giving them what they would normally get on a weekly wage. That would have made sense. But an additional $2,400 a month when they're not working, when those of us who are still working got nothing extra, and those of us who are self-employed, we get nothing extra.
Rebecca, thanks a lot for the call. Gave us a lot to work with. Mark, I know some of the CARES Act extended unemployment to self-employed workers, I believe. But in general, Rebecca, worried about overspending on unemployment there, first of all.
So look, $600 in additional weekly unemployment benefits actually is ridiculous. It means that the average person on unemployment for that period was getting about 140% as much unemployment as on work. It didn't end up being very harmful for the economy because this only happened through July. Most of that period we were in lockdown. But I think everyone agrees that was too much. What we're paying right now is unemployment plus 300. And I think that's reasonable for a pandemic economy. It means the average worker is getting about as much on unemployment, slightly less as in their jobs. This House bill would boost that up to 400. I frankly think that's the wrong direction. What we should be doing is extending unemployment to help those that need it, but tapering that down over time as more and more jobs become available.
Rebecca, thanks for that call. Rebecca also concerned about foreign aid as part of our deficit. How big a factor is money spent in other countries, Mark?
So in a typical year, foreign aid is about 2% of the budget, and about half of that is really military. So in terms of what you'd actually think of as aid is more like 1%. It's not large relative to the whole. That doesn't mean that it shouldn't be scrutinized. Every part of the budget deserves scrutiny. We should spend it well, but it's not a major part of the overall budget.
Thanks for that call. We'll go to Vernon now in Lake Geneva. Vernon, hi.
Hi. Most of the area that I'm in is a resort community. All of the restaurants, all of the facilities have been shut down or limited. There's come summer, if this stays this way, these are all lake communities as resorts. And how do the businesses like ours in the restaurants come back up with money when nobody walks in the door to buy a sandwich or to buy an ice cream cone?
Vernon, thanks a lot for the call. I want to throw that to Mark. Mark, there's been concern that, okay, yes, we had help for businesses to get them through the PPP and other programs like that. Vernon worried that some of the hardest hit businesses there, resorts and restaurants, not getting enough of the support they need, not getting the targeted support they need. What do you think?
Yeah, so back in last spring, we had a program called the Paycheck Protection Program that basically gave money to any small or moderate sized business. It was pretty indiscriminate. And at the time, frankly, every business was basically at threat. As it turns out, most businesses have been able to survive and make it through this pandemic okay, the exception being businesses that are really directly affected by the pandemic, the restaurant industry being the biggest example, restaurant and travel. We had a second round of PPP that is still going out. It actually, while the original benefit offered 10 weeks worth of payroll, this one offers about 14 weeks for restaurants. So restaurants do get a little bit of extra in the second PPP. I'm hopeful, I'm an optimist, that with the vaccines, that come springtime and summer, restaurants are going to be really able to have very vibrant outdoor dining and indoor dining. And the second round of PPP is going to be enough for them. But just in case it's not, this new bill making its way through the House does have an additional pot of money for restaurants. And there's other options as well, including some SBA loans. So not every restaurant is going to make it, sadly, but I am optimistic that the total level of support is going to be enough, along with a quick recovery as more of us get vaccinated.
Vernon, thanks a lot for that call. We're talking to Mark Goldwine from the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, looking at our annual deficit in the United States. Big last year, projected to be big again this year. Back to your calls now. Frank is with us in Door County. Frank, hi.
Hello. I have a question concerning the tax cut that took place in the former administration, which did not help me, but it helped some people who were at the upper end of the tier. I'm wondering what difference that has made. There were projections that over a 10-year period, if we hit certain markers in our growth, that would equal out and be just fine. Now, we weren't hitting those markers before the pandemic. I don't think we hit one quarter. So what deficit situation did that put us in going into a pandemic? And would it be like, would it be likely that we would see an overturn of that? I doubt it. It's not a popular thing to do. It's always popular to cut taxes. However, that is, to me, a large part of the problem we got ourselves into.
Frank, thanks a lot for the call. That's 2017, I think, Mark, that had passed. And yeah, the argument was, yes, it's cutting taxes, it's cutting revenue, but it'll boost the economy. And that will ultimately boost the revenue, make it almost revenue neutral. Again, COVID interfered with that, obviously, but how did that pan out from what we had seen up to that point?
Look, I don't know of any real-world examples of a tax cut paying for itself. There's a theoretical case that could, but it doesn't happen in reality except for in very specific circumstances, and this wasn't one of them. Because of the pandemic, there's so many other factors. We can't tell exactly how much this tax cut cost. But the estimates from Congressional Budget Office and others were that even after the economic boost, it would still cost $2 trillion over 10 years, which is tremendous. And by the way, I should add, after we pass those tax cuts, you know, the theory is you cut taxes and that'll force you to cut spending. But after we pass tax cuts on a partisan basis, we then agreed on a bipartisan basis to boost defense and non-defense spending by almost another $2 trillion. And so we came into this pandemic having just added $4 trillion to the 10-year deficit, plus now another $4 trillion of pandemic spending, plus another $2 trillion on its way, plus I don't even know what's going to happen with infrastructure less. It seems like in both parties, the only direction they know how to go is up, is more and more deficits.
Thanks for that call. Roy joins us next in Milwaukee. Roy, hi.
Hi. Like the previous caller, I'm concerned about the tax revenue side of things, and especially long term. And I wonder if you've run an analysis to get a handle on how tax rates for individuals and corporations would have to be adjusted upwards. What would it take to put us in a responsible position with respect to deficits?
Roy, thanks for the call. Possible tax increases is part of our solution, Mark.
Tax increases have to be part of the solution. I think it's really difficult to do the solution 100% on the tax rate side, both because our spending is continuing to grow rapidly with healthcare costs and retirement, but also because there is some limit where as you start to raise rates too much, it creates a lot of sort of escape valves within the economy. And so we're better off probably doing a combination of rates, but also broadening the tax base, looking for loopholes and deductions that we can close. I think a place we should all agree where we can start is let's at least collect the taxes that we're owed. Right now, there's a huge tax gap, a huge amount of money that individuals, small businesses, and corporations owe that they aren't paying. We should start by at least making sure that people pay what they owe in current taxes.
Thanks a lot for that call. Mark, and I think I've run this by you before, it seems pretty common for politicians to worry about deficits when the other party is in power. And then when their party's in power, they get to do their own agenda. They don't worry about it so much. With that political landscape, are you skeptical that anybody's going to really tackle these issues?
I'm worried that we're not going to tackle them before it's too late. I have some hope. I think the trust funds provide an opportunity. I think the fact that there are policies that can lower healthcare costs for everyone, including the federal government, create some opportunity. But I'm very worried that politicians will keep ignoring this, again, except for as sort of a cudgel when they're in the minority, that they will keep ignoring this until it's too late.
And then with this COVID relief package in the news this week in Congress over the next few weeks now, it seems in a lot of ways like Democrats are locked in on this $1.9 trillion package that you support parts of. You're worried that other parts are unnecessary or not very effective ways to spend the money. Do you think there's still an opportunity to tweak that?
I think there is for sure an opportunity to tweak it. First of all, we don't know which parts of this is actually going to be compliant with Senate rules, the so-called Byrd rule. But I also think different senators are going to have different opinions. And so there will be tweaks. The question is how significant they are. If I could do maybe just one thing to this bill, it would be to get rid of this unemployment. Right now, it boosts unemployment benefits, which doesn't make a lot of sense to me, and then cuts them off completely at the end of August. If instead of boosting them, we can sort of keep them at their current level and then taper them down, but extend them, say, through the end of the year, I think that would make a big difference because there's still going to be a lot of joblessness at the end of August. And I think to just cut it off completely would be really hurtful to a lot of people.
Mark, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
Mark Goldwine is the Senior Vice President and Senior Policy Director for the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. We talked to him today about the federal deficit. The Congressional Budget Office is projecting a $2.3 trillion deficit this year before President Biden's $1.9 trillion spending bill.